love, everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. Talk. So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Is a bi-weekly show in which we talk about anything and everything that has to do with the solo careers of the Beatles. It could be about their music, their history, whatever we like. And I'm Ken Michaels. I'm one of the four regular co-hosts of this show. And you might know me for a number of Beatle programs. I host a syndicated Beatles radio show called Every Little Thing. I'm also one of several co-hosts for a Beatles podcast called Things We Said Today. You might also know my Beatles website, kenmichaelsradio.com. And I'm being joined by my three esteemed co-hosts for this show. First of all, I'd like to introduce you to the author of several books, including Songs Who Were Singing, Guided Tours Through the Beatles' Lesser-Known Tracks, and also Michael Jackson FAQ. She also has written articles called Deep Beatles and also Deep Soul for Beatle Fan and also Something Else Reviews. And she's also entered the world of being a DJ. Yes, indeedy. She hosts a program, which is really wonderful, called Bottomless Soul, which is on Bumps Radio once a month. So we welcome Kit O'Toole. Hi, Kit.
Hi, Ken. Great to see you and great to see all of you watching again.
Yeah, good to be back with everybody. And next up, we have a dean at Monmouth University who has written several books of interest to Beatle fans, including the Beatles Encyclopedia. And he's written two books now on George Martin, covering his whole life and career. The first one was called Maximum Volume, and his new one, which just came out recently, is called Sound Pictures. Say hi to Ken Womack.
Hello, solo Beatles fans.
Good to see you, Ken.
You too, Ken.
The show with two Kens.
There aren't enough of us.
Last but not least, we have one of the co-hosts of a solo Paul McCartney podcast called Two Legs, which he co-hosts with David Gargolino, and that's Tom Hunyadi. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Ken. Hello, Kit. And hello, Ken. Hello, everybody watching.
We've got another great show in store for you. And thanks to everybody for the wonderful responses we've gotten so far to this show. We've got a lot of ground to cover. I'm sure many of you know that between September, October, and November, these are very intense months for Beatle fans, between Paul McCartney's new album, Egypt Station, all the releases surrounding Imagine, from John Lennon coming out in October, and also the Beatles White Album box set coming out in November. But at the same time as all this is going on, the two surviving Beatles have been on tour. And we're going to talk about that in just a few moments. But first, I want to address something that happened last week, and it was pretty big news for us Beatle fans. And we were all happy to celebrate that Paul's new album, Egypt Station, debuted at number one on the Billboard album charts, the top 200. And I do want to say one thing about this, because, you know, all the reports have said it's his first number one album since Tug of War in 1982, but not enough is being said about the fact that it debuted at number one. And this is, in fact, the very first time that any of the four Beatles in their solo careers ever debuted at number one. So I'd like to get everybody's reaction to Paul's debut at the top of the charts and find out, does it really matter to you? What kind of significance does this hold for you that in this day and age, in 2018, Paul can top the album charts? Why don't we start with, how about you, Ken?
I think it's a wonderful accolade, quite frankly. I'm sure you may have felt the same way I did. I was rooting for Paul to to have the number one spot, and he clearly turned over enough units by far to take the top spot. Whether you love the album or perhaps you have a lukewarm response to it, it does say a lot about the solo Beatles and the Beatles' reach in a new century, in a not-so-new century at this point. There's also something meaningful in terms of relevance, which I'm sure is very important to Paul McCartney, but in terms of his ability to create the excitement, the buzz that you have to debut at number one. And let's face it, we've talked about this before. He and his team did it masterfully.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How about you, Kit?
Well, I just want to pick up on what Ken just said. His marketing team was remarkable. Absolutely. I mean, they had him everywhere. I mean, you couldn't get away from Egypt Station, but that is important now because he's not going to get the, you know, same kind of radio play he used to get. Mm-hmm. Videos, of course, aren't even shown on TV anymore. It's all online. So, you know, they knew they had to reach different places. So, you know, having him on talk shows and so forth and having those special, giving those special concerts was brilliant. You know, and even interviewing him on various sites. So, you know, that was absolutely brilliant. And that partially, I think, you know, contributed to him being number one. And I think, you know, kind of echoing what Ken said, that's it's just wonderful, you know, that he's, you know, 76 years old and uh-huh. had number one album, debuting at number one. That's, I'd say that's pretty impressive. And it just shows the interest that is still there, you know, for him and the Beatles too, but you know, Paul McCartney is a solo artist, so it was so gratifying to see that.
Yeah, and I think with the exception of Tony Bennett, I think Tony Bennett holds the record for debuting at number one as the oldest artist to do so.
Right.
But I think Paul might now be in second place.
And,
you know, it's astonishing. You know, when I heard it debuted at number one, obviously I was thrilled. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, why couldn't Flowers in the Dirt do the same thing? Why couldn't Flaming Pie do the same thing? Or A Chaos and Creation in the Backyard? Those are all marvelous albums. But I think if you look back to those times, he didn't do as much promotion outside of touring behind Flowers in the Dirt, for example, and Chaos.
Right.
So promotion is really the key.
Yeah, and before we lose sight of your really good point there, Ken, not only did he not do that advance promotion, or his labels at the time did not do that advance promotion, if I remember correctly, he was not on tour and he wasn't creating that buzz. Paul, in many ways, is more present now than he was for those releases, which, you know, could be arguably as good, if not better, albums for some years, right?
Right.
You know, that's a great question. Now, those were very competitive times. On the Billboard charts at least, but still he wasn't creating that same buzz by any stretch.
True. Tom, how about you?
Well, yeah, I was very excited. Like you all said, the marketing was brilliant, a little annoying at times, but was but I think very brilliant. You know, I think it shows a couple things. One, people still want to buy physical copies, and I think that's excellent. I'm very happy that, you know, he reached out to, you know, the YouTube generations, the Spotify people. I thought that was important to get younger people involved. I think, you know, working, you know, unfortunately with Kanye, you know, a few years back, I think that got him his name out there in the millennial generation. So it's a lot about this release was very important. Seeing a 76-year-old man, you know, get debut at number one, I think is very important. I know he's been dying for this for years, to just be number one, whether it's a single charts or an album chart. So it's very impressive. And, you know, and I think it, you know, going back to Capitol really helped make this happen too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, with that, you know, what was I going to say? I just think it, you know, going to a bigger company like Capital really helped out. And then you got to look at all the configurations too. I mean, I'm a collector. I mean, I liked, you know, I'm not going to tell you how many different versions I have, but I mean, you got to take that under consideration as well. I mean, there's a lot of collectors out there, and I think a lot of them took advantage of all these configurations as well.
Paul certainly knows how to address those collectors.
You make a good point about Capital, Tom. Capital had something to prove, and I bet there is, at least as far as we can tell right now, some unsung hero, or maybe a sung hero, at Capital who really worked this for Paul, because there were other times when Capital didn't have the same level of result.
Right.
Yeah, and also you brought up a good point, Tom, about all the different configurations, because, I mean, you know, believe me, you're not alone in all the different versions you got, believe me. I mean, everybody was talking about it online, so, you know, having all these different editions, formats, that just continued, you know, to help.
Right, and plus, you're getting when you buy a ticket, you're getting an album as well.
That's so right.
I've got two more albums coming from buying two tickets last week.
And there are bundles you can buy of McCartney merchandise, and when you buy it, you're buying the album at the same time. You're buying digital downloads too.
Yeah.
And I remember when I went to buy my copy of Egypt Station at Target, I was thinking, why are they doing the special version at Target? And Barnes & Noble has a colored vinyl version. And they were telling me that all these companies are competing with each other, despite the fact that they don't even have big record departments at all.
Right.
You know, and it's just a way of luring people to each of these companies. And, you know, Paul is answering to them by putting out all these different configurations. He knows there are a lot of Beatle collectors out there. And, you know, to some people, they either go crazy over all this stuff, or they love Paul.
Right. And he's done it before, especially back in the early 80s. I mean, there's been multiple copies of 45s throughout the 80s as well.
Right.
So it's not like this is something new. So
in Record Store Day, he always has something out.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But I've been saying,
speaking of Record Store Day, I'm I'm hoping go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, I've been saying on various Beatles shows that the whole carpool karaoke thing with James Corden was a masterstroke.
Yes.
And right after that happened, words just spread like wildfire on the internet, especially on Facebook. Everybody was sharing that. A lot of casual fans of Paul's or Beatle fans were watching it and digging it. And from then on, some of them had some interest at what Paul was going to do with a new release.
Good job, Ken, but you need to go a little further, and this is what's interesting. You're right. Casual fans, folks who are sensitized to liking Paul and the Beatles, got on board, but so did people who weren't fans at all. The amount of people, and I'm sure this happened with the three of you too, who shared with me that video.
Yes.
The carpool karaoke. Yeah. People I didn't even think like the Beatles were suddenly jumping on board. So it was, like you said, a masterstroke. That was a game changer.
Yeah, and it was edited so well. It really was.
Yeah.
And then all the appearances he made with Jimmy Fallon and the concerts at Grand Central and at Abbey Road Studios and Lipa and where else? The Cavern. You know, all that built up this excitement and that created it to debut at number one. So kudos to Paul. I mean, like you said, Kit, you can't rely on radio for Paul to have a big selling record. He'll get some airplay. It's minimal. There's only one or two formats of radio that will play Paul, his new music. So he did a lot of the work himself, as did the folks at Capitol.
Yep.
Okay. So as I was saying before, we have two tours to talk about. Ringo Starr is winding down his All-Star Band tour, which ends September 29th at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles, where it seems like all of his tours end at the Greek Theater. And in this latest lineup, he made a couple of changes. He brought back Colin Hay from Men at Work and also Graham Goldman from 10cc, brand new member. He had never been a member of the All-Stars before. And Graham also has a long history of writing a lot of hit records in the 60s, like For Your Love for the Yardbirds, No Milk Today for Herman's Hermit, songs like those. And I'd like to get everyone's take on the concert. Well, Tom, did you get to see Ringo yet?
No, he hasn't come this way. So,
okay.
So, I mean, all I can really do is just, you know, say that, you know, I was curious to see what changes would be made. You know, the odd thing being, you know, the addition of Anthem from 2012. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of interesting. Wasn't expecting that. I was kind of hoping, you know, maybe something like We're on the Road Again from the new album. But, you know, yeah. I mean, but it's cool. The 10th CC stuff is excellent. I'm glad to see they changed the Rosanna to Hold the Line. I'm not 100% sure if they've done that before.
Well, they can't,
and then,
yeah.
You know, yeah. And then, you know, Hold the Line. I mean, no, I'm sorry. Overkill is just one of the great Men at Work songs, you know. Love
Absolutely.
That since the first day I saw it on MTV. It's a great jam. However, do you know if the last time he was on, did he do Be Good Johnny or It's Our Mistake? Has he added those two, do you know? Or was it always Down Under and Who Can It Be Now?
And Overkill, yeah.
Yeah. I could swear
Overkill.
That.
Okay.
I could swear he might have done It's a Mistake at one point. But I know he always did the other three.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Overkill is one of my favorites, too.
Yeah,
Ken?
Yeah. So,
sorry.
What's that, Ken?
I know that you and I both went to the same show at Radio City Music Hall.
Sure did.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I've seen him on two legs of this tour, or at least two shows. I saw him in Atlantic City, and of course, just recently at Radio City. I love this lineup. I think it's stronger than the other three shows I've seen. With previous lineups, I was glad to see a little less Mr. Frankly, I'm sorry. My wife Janine loves Richard Page, but we can't agree on everything.
No,
and
he's got a great voice though.
Oh, he certainly does, and a good basis. But I thought that was addition by subtraction. I love Colin Hay, and it was fun to watch Colin Hay participate in the other bandmates' songs.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch him pick up a backing vocal, for example, on Africa, or for Lukather, or to pick up another piece on The Things We Do for Love for our friend from Teen CC. I thought that was fabulous. I'm sad to say Lukather did play Rosanna. I wish he would go to other places with his great catalog. But Hold the Line makes up for everything. Hold the Line is just a great power song. And, of course, that's the end of Lukather's set, and he ends it well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kit, how about you?
Well, as you might have guessed, I saw Ringo recently. I saw him over the weekend in Chicago. And, I mean, of course, Ringo is just a marvel. I mean, doing jumping jacks at the end of the show at 78 years old. I mean, the man is ageless. I just, you know, it's just astounding. But I have to say, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Ken Womack, because Colin Hay was the other huge highlight for me. I had not seen him with the All-Star Band before. I mean, his voice hasn't changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all. I just couldn't believe it. You could close your eyes and it was like it was 1982. I just, you know, just really unaffected, very charming. I mean, you know, the goofy dancing. And I did love his backup singing on Rosanna Africa. You know, it was just great because as Steve Lukather pointed out, you know, Toto and Men at Work were kind of rivals, you know, back in the early 80s. So to see them perform together was a lot of fun. Love the Santana stuff. And I have to say, I took my parents because this was the first time they saw Beatle live. And,
oh, nice.
And it was really a great night. And my dad particularly loved the Santana part. He's a huge Santana fan. I loved it, too. They did a fabulous job on those. And Steve Lukather handling the Carlos Santana solos, not easy.
No. Hey, and pro tip to our audience out there, I don't know about you guys, I've seen Colin Hay twice now in his solo shows. Mm-hmm. He is an incredible delight.
I'd love to see him.
It is half stand-up, and some of it's heartbreaking. I mean, the places he goes with his story. It is really something to behold. I strongly urge you to do that. And I was an early adapter on this one, adopter rather. I saw Men at Work when they opened for Fleetwood Mac in 1982.
Wow.
Before they were a household name. And you could tell that they were something different.
Yeah. Yeah, as for me, I've loved all the All-Star Band tours. I feel very privileged that I've gotten to see all of them. But the biggest joy of all isn't just that Ringo's there and he's doing his songs. It's the chemistry and the combination of talents that you see in every All-Star Band. And just the fact that where else are you going to see Ringo drum behind Evil Ways? Where else are you going to see Ringo drum behind Who Can It Be Now? Or The Things We Do for Love, or Hold the Line. You know, it's one thing for him to do his own songs, and that's great. But also, you know, there's this other life that Ringo has had as a drummer, and it's nice to see him drumming behind other people. And, you know, it's such a joy when you have a combination of talent that you may not picture together. It may not make sense on paper, but then when you see it live, it all gels. And the one thing that has always stood out for me, and I'm not trying to take away anything from this particular tour, but my favorite tour of all that Ringo ever did was one that he did, I believe it was 2006, when he had Greg Lake in the band, and he had Sheila E. and Howard Jones and Roger Hodgson. And they're going from In the Court of the Crimson King to The Glamorous Life. You know, it's like, you talk about a widespread of music there, and yet somehow it all made perfect sense. And that's the great thing about seeing Ringo live. And yes, I want to see Ringo do his solo music and his Beatle music. And it's great to see him when he's up on stage and he has this great rapport with the audience. He's become quite a showman, although he tends to say the same things from show to show. I do wish he'd shake it up as far as his own set list. He really tends to keep it safe. This is very much a safe playlist from everybody. True. But also part of the fun is that some of these artists you may not care to see on their own, but you'll go to see them in a unit like this. And then when you go and you see somebody like Colin Hay, and you know Men at Work, but you don't know the name Colin Hay, then they go into Who Can It Be Now? And then the audience is like, oh, that's the guy that sang it. You know, they don't all know the names. Or Steve Lukather can play Rosanna and, you know, they'll go, oh, I didn't know, you know, he was on that record. So, yeah, whether it's Ringo or Paul, I always see people there that are going to see them for the first time. And part of my thrill is to watch other people enjoy the shows that have never seen these concerts before.
I totally agree with you. Oh, go ahead.
No,
it's
your turn, Tom.
Okay, yeah, cool. I totally agree with you, Ken. I mean, first time I saw Ringo was in 99 for the fifth incarnation. And, you know, I wasn't the biggest Cream fan, but I loved the two songs that Ginger Baker, or that, what's his name, played? Sorry, Jack Bruce. And personally, I think Whiter Shade of Pale is one of the greatest songs of all time. And seeing, you know, Gary Brooker do that live was an absolute joy and a dream come true. So, yeah, seeing these artists that you probably wouldn't see normally by themselves, I think that's definitely one of the benefits from seeing these shows.
And you know what? Ringo doesn't get enough credit for giving all of these guys this kind of stage because – you know, I've been privileged to see Colin Hay because he plays a lot around here in our smaller theaters. I know most people don't get to do that, but and most of these artists I would never see if they weren't with Ringo. And that's a really wonderful and generous thing he's done for a long time in his career. And I think he'll be remembered well for that.
Yeah, he's been doing this now since 1989. And there was a time when there were gaps of like 3 years in between tours, but now it's every year.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that he keeps doing this. And you know, just the fact that he
enjoys it. I have a question, Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he owe? Well, I noticed that when I saw him first time in 99, he didn't play drums on every track. I mean, was that something he just started doing recently?
Oh, no. From the very beginning, he alternates between singing lead vocals up front and playing drums in the back.
Which he still does, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, because right. I was just going to say, yeah, I saw him in probably mid-90s. It was the tour he did. It was wonderful. Billy Preston, Felix Cavalieri, I think he was there. And yeah, I think he did the same thing even back then. He would, part of the time he'd drum, part of the time he was up front. Yeah.
And he's always had a second drummer, sometimes a third drummer.
Right.
And some songs are difficult to drum and sing at the same time.
Yeah.
So usually the ones that Ringo does both are ones that he's so comfortable with, like Boys, for example, he will always do, or I Want to Be Your Man, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, and I just wanted to say one thing only because, Ken, you and I were at Radio City. This was the first time I ever saw a Ringo concert where I would say 70% of the time the audience stood up.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, it was a very energized crowd. I've seen him in some places where they never stand up, perhaps at the beginning and the end. This was a great festive crowd. It was a fun night and really a great way to see Ringo. In fact, I thought they were far more energetic, certainly, than Atlantic City.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think the crowd always gets up when he does Yellow Submarine.
Oh, yeah.
That's a given. Yep. That's always in the middle of the show. But throughout most of this show, I had to stand up myself or I wouldn't have seen anything on stage. That's how it was.
Wow.
And to see anything at Radio City Music Hall, the place is just, it's so electric.
It's a
story. Because it's New York, you know, and you never know who's going to be there, who might turn up on stage, you know. But it was a joy to see this show. And I hope he just keeps on doing it for as long as he can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so let's move on to Paul. He just started his latest tour called the Freshen Up Tour. And as of this moment, he's done a couple of dates in Canada at Quebec City and Montreal. Have you guys seen the set list for the show?
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I'd like to know your takes on it. And we'll start with Tom.
Well, surprised there was no Mullican Tire. Usually does that in Canada. But, you know, I was hoping for a little bit more freshening up on this set list. You know, a lot of the stuff we know all of them. We know and we've seen all of this. Sure, I mean, you know, I can't believe maybe I'm Amazed is still there. I mean, I guess he's just going to be stubborn and play that one out until he's done touring, which fine. You know, I'm glad he brought back Michelle. Great, great song. You know, Letting Go, I've always loved. You know, Let Me Roll It. I wish he would end that one, but I mean, this doesn't, it's not going to stop me from enjoying the show when I go to see him in June out here in Phoenix. So I'm still looking forward to it, even if the set list is the same from what he played in Canada. But, you know, to see High, 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 the number two song was kind of weird at first, but, you know, it's interesting. I can't wait to see how that plays out after a hard day's night. If that's how he's going to do the set list. New song wise, I'm glad to see he's doing Who Cares. I mean, I think that's a good. I think that's going to play out well especially with the younger crowd. Hopefully that won't be a beer drink or a bathroom run. You know, so and then I'm really interested to see how Thought You does. You know, so. I'm still excited. Don't care. Hopefully he's still doing Let Him In, you know, when he comes here. So I'm looking forward to it. He definitely is, you know, as we're going to, you know, do here in a few minutes, definitely a freshening up is required for sure.
Well, you never know as the tour progresses if they'll change the set list around. And if you look at the schedule,
You've
got almost all of October open. So maybe he'll rehearse some new material with the band.
Yes, and it would be likely, knowing how he's tended to operate with major releases, if they're going to rehearse new material, we should be hearing some white album material. And hopefully things we haven't heard before. There's a real opportunity there.
Hmm. Well, right. I know as far as when he's put out his reissues of his catalog, his tours haven't reflected that.
That's true. I was referring to Beatles, but yeah, that's a good point.
But he's already doing Back in the USSR and Obla Dio Obla Da and Helter Skelter anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Ken, how about you? What do you think of his set list?
I'm delighted that he's playing From Me to You. It's a lovely little song, and it deserves to be heard. It was 2004, no, 2005 when he did Please Please Me, which was, he's got the right band, too, for those kind of, it's a crack band, perfect for playing those songs. Mm-hmm. But I was hoping for more of that, and I really would like to see some White Album songs that we may not have heard on this set list. It's great to see some of the new material. I can't imagine, Tom, that he's ever not going to play Maybe I'm Amazed unless he just... I do know in 1990 there were a couple times when he dropped it out because he was having some throat issues. But, frankly, right. That's the song he expects to be remembered for. So, it's wonderful. And I understand Paul's philosophy. We've all heard it. He knows that several people, thousands, will be in the audience every night who will never see him but once. And he's trying to make sure he accounts for those audience members. But he's got such a fascinating and interesting catalog that he could be, to take his own pun, freshening it up more.
48 years of a solo career, So
it's kind of remarkable that in all these years and all the concerts that he's done, he still has number one songs that he's never done live.
That's right.
That's how rich his catalog is. Go ahead, Tom.
I've got one coming up.
Foreshadowing.
Okay.
I too am, there's some great additions here. So from You Love Me Do, that's an interesting addition. I think he does I've Just Seen a Face. Yes, he does I've Just Seen a Face, which, that's a nice addition. There are some songs, I'm sure there'll be viewers or people listening in right now who will say, you're ridiculous, but why does he continue to do Queenie Eye? I mean, it's an okay.
Ridiculous, kid.
Yeah. I guess it's fine, but I just wonder why after all these years, he's still playing, includes that in the set. 4 or 5 seconds, I think. That could be retired. I understand that it was his, way as one of you said earlier tonight that to introduce him to a new audience, younger audience, and it did. That's great.
It was a top five hit, right?
It was. And I just think, might be able to move on from that, but that's just my opinion. I was a little surprised at Maybe I'm Amazed that was still included because, his voice is just not quite what it was. And those are some hard notes to hit for any singer.
Yeah.
And so I was a little surprised, but as you said, I guess he thinks, as you said, Ken, that's sort of his signature song. Well, one of them, but a signature song of his, and he thinks the audience expects him to play it. I'm one of the people that, like, if I didn't hear him play it in the next concert I'd go to, I wouldn't be upset. I've heard him do it many times. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing with Paul, that he really wants to give people their money's worth. And I get that. And I appreciate that. And so as you said, maybe some of the people in the audience, that this may be the only time they see them. So they want to hear Hey Jude. They want to hear Let It Be. I get that. But I just think, it's I could go without hearing those again too, but again, I get it. he's pleasing the crowd.
Yeah. I just think that it's remarkable what he does on stage. And he gives you almost 3 hours.
Yeah, that's amazing.
For anybody, and to think that he's 76 and he's doing this. And I've talked a lot about his set list and how much I wish that he would change it. And I wish that there weren't certain songs that he has to do on every single tour or feel like he has to do, like Hey Jude and Let It Be. And like you, Kit, I wouldn't miss it if I went to one concert and you didn't do Hey Jude. Yeah. But there will be people that are expecting it. In fact, it's funny you mention that, because the Grand Central Station concert, he didn't do Let It Be, and there were not Let It Be. He didn't do Hey Jude, and there were people that commented, "Why didn't he do Hey Jude?"
Huh?
But
forgot about that. Yeah.
But there are so many songs that I wish that he would give a rest. Let Me Roll It. Yes, Tom. He's done that on almost every single tour. I don't know why. As much as I love, believe me, I love Blackbird. He must have a strong affection for that song, because he's done it on almost every single tour. He hasn't done Maybe I'm Amazed on every tour. There's been a few where he
That's
didn't
right.
do it at all.
Right.
But these days he feels like he has to do it. I don't know why he's leaving in Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. I love it. You know, I think it sounds great. But there's so many songs from his catalog, especially his solo catalog, that I wish he would do live. And that's the perfect segue for what we're about to do here right now. But overall, I mean, I also understand that there are some people who will say, stop complaining about this. What more do you want from the man? He doesn't owe us anything. Ringo doesn't owe us anything. And I agree with that, too.
Very true.
I'm going to support whatever he does. And, you know, if he does the same set list for the rest of his career, I'm still going to support it, because he's one of the greatest songwriters of all time. To me, I think he's got the greatest catalog of all time between his solo catalog and the Beatles. So what more can you want from someone like that? But we're going to do something right now, which I proposed to everybody here, which I thought would be fun. And that is to list three songs that Paul has never done live before that we'd like to see him do live, whether it's solo or Beatles. So I'd be very curious to hear everybody's picks. We're going to go around like a round robin here and do one at a time. Why don't we start with Ken?
You got it, Ken. I know where I'm starting. I want to hear Rocky Raccoon.
Okay.
It's a fun song. This would be the perfect tour, obviously, for it. It has lots of wonderful effects that his great band can get involved in. The rim shot, the great acoustic opening, the jangle piano. It's just a blast. You could even play with that false ending that goes into Don't Pass Me By. Just a great little tune. I think people would have true joy from that experience.
You might be pushing it for that little extra, you know, the end of the song going into Don't Pass Me By. I don't think you'd do that. But
I happen to know that Paul is a listener of our show.
Oh, yeah.
I want to make sure I say my ideas as fully as possible. And I urge the three of you to do the same.
Paul's a listener of our show, huh?
Well, I should say viewer, since this is a video cast.
Okay. Mm. Okay. In that case, Little Lamb Dragonfly. Little Lamb Dragonfly.
I love that one, too. Is that one of your picks, Ken?
Actually, it wasn't, because I thought that wasn't realistic.
Oh, we're not being realistic here. Absolutely. No, I think all bets are off.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you my first pick, and that will be Helen Wheels. I just think Helen Wheels is a great rock song. I think it would work really well as a live song on stage. It's a great rocker. People could sing along with it. I could see the band getting into it. It's got that great guitar riff on there. I think it would be, you know, a really good song live for Paul to do. I'm surprised he's never done it live before. All right. Kit, your turn.
Well, I, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Ken, I love my R&B. And so I'd love to hear him do an R&B tinge song, which has always been one of my favorites, Arrow Through Me. I love that song. And I think it'd be really interesting live. It's just always been a favorite, because I always love when Paul explores a little more of the soulful side, you know, and that was one for me. And quite frankly, he could play the whole Back to the Egg album and I'd be totally cool with that. I mean,
not the only one.
Yeah, exactly. I would be there in a flash, you know, but that's one that I would love to hear.
Now, you told me before the show that you have backup songs.
Oh, yes.
Okay, because he did Arrow Through Me.
I have a list.
He did Arrow Through Me in 1979 when Wings toured the UK.
Oh, that's right. He did. That's right. As I was
it
thinking,
was so
of
brief us. Though, it doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of he never did it in the U.S. How about that?
Oh, it only counts if it's an American.
Well, remember, I quote Paul McCartney: "The United States is the greatest showbiz town ever."
Nice. Okay. I like that.
Then all I guess Mull of Kintyre is still eligible, then.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's right. Girl School.
Yes. Oh. Girl School. That'd be cool.
All righty. Tom, your pick.
Well, you know, the thought of him doing a song like Rocky Raccoon, a song that he's never done before live, sounds fantastic, but I'm just going to stick with the solo years. And there's a clip on YouTube you can find of him rehearsing the song, getting ready for the 1980 Japanese tour.
Uh-huh.
But he's never done a live, the number one hit, and that's With a Little Luck. I still think he could pull this off. I think, you know, again, he's got the, you know, Wicks would, like, you know, definitely do a great job with all the organ keyboard playing on that song, and give me it. I'm ready.
I'm right with you. Absolutely. Yeah. That is a great choice. And in fact, you could bring on stage. Paul could have his own synthesizer. Wicks will be back there doing his thing. That's a very dramatic and exciting song.
Well, my favorite part is that instrumental in the middle and how it builds. I mean,
I mean, I don't think they would do that live, but it would be a great addition.
It's kind of difficult.
You know, that middle instrumental part.
Yeah. If you're playing in an arena, to play a soft song, you know, is kind of tough. I think you need to play louder or rockier songs, unless it's a song that everybody knows, like Yesterday. Although, With a Little Luck was a number one hit.
That's right.
Which he's never done live. One of the ones he's never done live.
And that's astounding, isn't it? I mean, I think that is still played on the radio today. You know, it's still one. Yeah, and they never did it live. That's amazing.
It's a hell of a tune.
Well, it is. Still sounds great.
Paul did say that he rehearsed it with Wings, and for some reason it didn't work out.
Well, yeah, as Tom noted, you can watch the video. It's but where is it?
Yeah.
Let's go. Look at this. Ooh, some good suggestions here from Mike.
Yes, there are.
Wow.
Ode to a Koala Bear. Very nice. He should do that in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. That'd be perfect.
Okay. So let's go back to Ken.
Okay. Wow. Where to go next? I'm following Tom's lead. There's another great hit that he hasn't done live, and that's No More Lonely Nights.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's got everything. It's a great pop song. It has moments of quietude, drama, and that sizzling Dave Gilmour solo. Would be lovely to hear that recreated. That's a great tune.
Absolutely. I don't know if he can handle it vocally, those high notes. You think he can do it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, but he's doing Maybe I'm Amazed, so. You know, that's a major league hit that's never graced the stage. Blows me away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would do that right after Rocky Raccoon. There's my answer.
The Ken Warnock wish list.
Yes.
All in one set.
Available in stores. No, not available in stores. No.
Okay, Kit, your turn.
I would love to hear Take It Away. And partially because it is just a, you know, it's a great song to begin with. It's a sentimental favorite for me. It's one of the early, we're talking about, it's one of the early McCartney albums I ever owned. And probably, and that video I remember vividly seeing as a kid. But more than that, I mean, it still holds up. I think it's still you know, it's got those lush harmonies, and I think this band could handle the harmonies. And since Paul has a horn section on this tour, no problem there. He could definitely do the horns. So I would just be thrilled. It would be worth every penny for me to see him do Take It Away.
See, I was going to ask you guys a question about this, because if you watch the Grand Central Station concert, he did have that horn section, and
that's
they
right.
played on Letting Go, and there was a very cool moment there when they just played solo, just the horns, towards the end, and he took those musicians on the road, but I wasn't sure if he used them for all the other songs that required horns. Do any of you guys know?
How about that? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just was noticing the great suggestion by Matt Smith. Sally G.
Yeah. That'd be good.
I don't know what the G stands for, but I know it was good.
Yeah, great selections here, folks. Keep them coming.
Yeah. That's what I call a perfect country song, Sally G. Right there. Okay, my next selection is, it's a song that I always wished was a big hit because it really deserved to be. And that is The World Tonight. I think The World Tonight would really work well live, especially when he's about to build up with his voice. And then the chorus comes in. I just think this band would sound great doing it. It's just one of those songs. You know, every now and then you talk about songs that Paul has done that for some reason they work better as live recordings than studio ones. Letting Go to me is the perfect example of that. The Wings Over America version, as much as I love the Venus and Mars version, I think the Wings Over America version blows it out of the water. And I think The World Tonight could be one of those songs where it could be great live. The way that Figure of Eight was. I think Figure of Eight's much better as a live song.
Right.
But The World Tonight would be one of my choices. Tom?
All right. Well, my number two is, you know, it's unfortunate that when he started touring again in 89, that whole back 80s catalog just seemed to be forgotten, and it really is a shame. And my number two would be a fun song called Spies Like Us. I think it's just a fun song that I think everybody can get into during a live show, and obviously, you know, I mean, there's some good drumming that Abe can get behind and really, you know, just wail on those drums, and you know, some good fun guitar playing in there that Rusty can that can handle, and you know, and the vocals aren't vocally challenging to where Paul would struggle doing that song, I don't think. So I think it's a song that he can still do live today.
With that suggestion, I'm going to ask that we vote Tom off the island.
Oh no!
I think he just failed a Survivor challenge. I love Tom. I feel an affinity for him. but yeah, I say extinguish that torch.
Okay.
Aww.
Darn it. Well, I got one song with you, like I got with Kit. That's fine.
I happen to love Spies Like Us, Ken. I really
well, I knew
love
you
the
would,
whole sound
be,
of the
I,
record.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, it was good knowing you.
The show with one Ken left.
Do not betray me, Kit.
Oh, man, I'm feeling some pressure now.
What do you do?
No one else can pick songs like you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, somebody actually, I'm going to post this because this was one of my choices, so what the heck. Stranglehold. I would absolutely love to hear that live. I think it would absolutely rock. You know, that or Angry. I'd be okay with either one of those. But Stranglehold is probably that would be – that was on my list, so – So Scott's backing me
up. And it's got the
up.
Horns, too.
And
it's
got the horns, see? So yeah. This would all work out perfectly. Yeah. And by the way, I'm so glad, you know, seriously, that Paul put the horns back in. Because, you know, I loved a rock show seeing that wonderful horn section on Silly Love Songs. And so then for too long, he's, you know. And I just think, you know, yes, they've tried to replicate with the synthesizer. It's not the same. You know, it's just not the same.
In most cases, it isn't.
Yep.
You know, like Got to Get You Into My Life is not the same.
That's right.
Using synthesizers as opposed
to
a horn section. Yeah, but I'll take anything from Press to Play.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely. Okay.
Who's Over Busker would be great as a live song.
Look at that suggestion from Robbie. Get on the Right Thing.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's a hell of a fun song.
Yep.
Go, Robbie. Yeah. Robbie, you can stay on the island. Yeah.
And see, and he backs me up on Take It Away. So thank you, Robbie.
Robbie works. Yeah, Robbie could be our third person when we lose Ken and Tom.
See, Tom, this is going to be it. Now I've got my little titanium man.
Did I say that out loud? Yeah.
All right, so I believe it's Ken's turn.
Right? Oh, okay. Well, now I'm putting myself in a corner with all of my trash talking of my colleagues. So I this is risky at this point, isn't it? There's a lot of risk going here. You know, there are two songs that I think of together in my mind that one I'm certain he hasn't played, but I take either one. And that's Somebody Who Cares.
Yeah, nice.
Or, and you guys would, I haven't done a thorough study, but a song that would be nice with his current vocal range, and the horns could have fun with this, is Distractions.
Mm. Interesting.
He didn't do that, right?
No, he didn't.
No, that is a lovely song, and that would be a nice piece, especially, and that's good vocal range for him right now.
Plus that real soft delivery, which Paul has been using.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Kisses on the Bottom and, you know. That would suit him very well. Definitely. Excellent choice there, Ken.
Thank you, Ken. I forgive you for earlier.
Well, let's see if this last song can hopefully you guys can throw me out a life raft while I'm sinking over here. A song that I think that he can still do vocally, not every night per se, but maybe once a week, and that's the almighty Monkberry Moon, The Light.
Oh, those were my picks.
He can do that during the whole...
I think once a week, maybe, I think he can accomplish it. I mean, it's a great piano rocker that I think that he should give a shot to.
I don't think his voice
can handle that. And that's my pick.
Yeah, it's like he couldn't do Oh Darling, I don't think.
No, but, you know, he's I think he's doing a better job with the rockers these days as he is with the lighter songs. I mean, he's doing a great job with High, High, High. He's doing a great job with Helter Skelter, which has the same kind of, vocal range. I mean, I think that maybe, you know, try it once.
I'm glad you said that, Ken. I mean, we're correct, right? He's never played Oh Darling.
That's right.
Right.
That was on my list, too.
What a hell of a song, right? I mean, imagine if you have that in your catalog and you've never played it.
Uh-huh. One of the great rock vocals of all time.
Right.
Stunning.
Yep.
Maybe for the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road.
There you go.
If you were, Mr. Mayo, coming up with great ideas.
Yeah.
And he said Spies Like Us is underrated. So there, Ken.
Yep. So there you go. So Tom, you're I think you're gonna get up back on the island.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayo.
Mr. Mayo is right behind you.
Yeah. Me, Mr. Mayo, also suggests Too Much Rain, which is a great song.
That'd be beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So my final choice would be, speaking of number one songs he has never done live, Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey.
Mm.
And, I think that would be a real crowd pleaser. I could see everybody in the crowd waving their hands, you know, hands across the water as they're doing.
And with the brass right now, with the brass for that great bit.
Mm. If it keeps them, sure. You know, it's mind-boggling that he's never done Uncle Albert or With a Little Luck. And actually, since you really got introduced to Paul through Pipes of Peace,
Say, Say, Say,
And Pipes of Peace.
Yep.
That's true. He's never done Pipes of Peace live.
No, I'd love that. Yeah, Keep Undercover was one of my runner-ups.
Oh, that's a fun one. Yeah.
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 Yep.
That's one of my favorite songs from Pipes of Peace. Yep. But yeah, there's so many songs that Paul could do. And I was going to say that if you were just to narrow it down to the Beatles songs that he sang lead to that he hasn't done live before, there aren't too many left. So, but Oh Darling's definitely one of them I think we'd all love to see him do if he can pull it off. Yeah.
And if I could have a bonus one, I'd love to see Paul when he shows up again after his October break. Martha, my dear, I know one of our viewers mentioned that. With the brass, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a slick song. It'd be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. How about What You're Doing?
I'd love that. I would. I would. You know, it's my R&B thing again. I would love to hear that. Of course, it wouldn't be this. I mean, oh, it'd be awesome if he could get Stevie Wonder to appear on stage with him. But, you know.
Well, I'm talking about What You're Doing, the Beatles song.
Oh, I thought you meant.
Not What's That You're Doing.
That You're Doing.
Although that would be good.
What You're Doing is great. That'd be great, too. I'd go with either one.
Okay.
That's very kind.
I'm not picky.
All right. Well, since Ken is in White Album mode here, and we're nearing the end of our show, this is perfect timing because you have a major event that I think you'd like to tell the folks about that you've been very much behind.
Absolutely. So, you know, a big day in Beatledom yesterday when we got the inevitable announcement at this point that November 9th will be the release for the remixed White Album with all its attendant bonus discs and bonus tracks and all of that wonderful stuff. And of course, people are already debating out there in Beatleland, you know, what was included, what wasn't, all of those usual kinds of arguments. But I'm here to tell you the real story is happening right here in West Long Branch, New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore, 1 mile from the Atlantic Ocean. At Monmouth University, we're going to be hosting the 50th anniversary White Album Symposium. You are all welcome to attend. In fact, we need to figure out how Ken Michaels is going to be involved, and we need to have an offline conversation because, you know, too big to fail. We got to have Ken Michaels, maybe you could perform Little Land Dragonfly. It would be wonderful.
You'll lose the audience right there.
I'll do a big 12-string guitar bit for you. It'll be lovely. Uh-huh. In any event, we're going to be ground zero for that, kicking off on November 8th with the Weaklings. And at midnight, at the stroke of midnight, we will have a listening session in our beautiful Pollock Theater, which has HD quality fixtures, amazing surround sound. It's going to be beautiful. It'll be a curated event, and there will be refreshments, lots of stiff coffee to help people stay up. And then just a bunch of wonderful Beatles folks, Mark Lewisohn, Chris Thomas, of course, who was George Martin's assistant on the White Album. Jeff Emmerich's going to pick up the end of the show as we point toward the Abbey Road event. Next year, it should just be amazing. We're going to have a recording demo room where experts show folks how the tracks were made. It will be an absolute delight. And of course, that Friday night, we'll have a bunch of specialists talking about the box set. So it will be the place to be, and we hope you'll join us out here on the Jersey Shore. And there will be plenty of solo Beatles discussions because, of course, a lot of the roots of the solo Beatles are becoming evident during those White Album sessions in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
I'd like to propose a Talk More Talk panel at this event.
Done. It's done. We're
Yay!
Off. In fact, maybe that's the conversation to be had is about how the solo Beatles do begin to start to manifest themselves during the White Album. I would personally argue
I'd say it's earlier than that.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. But when you look at the White Album, you can find particular moments in Plastic Ono Band, All Things Must Pass, just to name two. Ram.
McCartney album.
That's right. You can draw right out of those sessions. And in fact, in some cases, there are songs that will appear in one form or another, even as snippets or in the case of Not Guilty. On actual albums. So there's an interesting kind of gestation taking place there.
Right.
Ken, we have a question here. Will any of it be live streamed?
So we're working on that. Of course, your first best option is to be here on the show.
To be there.
You know, it's a rare opportunity to meet with Mr. Mark Lewisohn and talk to him about these forthcoming books, which we hope are sooner rather than later. He will also be here for our Tuesday night record club. when we do the White Album, he'll be my co-host. So that'll be a great fun. I told the folks at Record Club tonight and there was a cheer. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement, but yes, we will look for some streaming options, so that folks don't have to miss out.
Okay. So is there a website address people can go to?
Heck yeah, there is. In fact,
here's
what you do. You go to, I'm going to make it fast for you. You go to kennethwomack.com and you will see a White Album era photograph of the Beatles with George Martin. You click that puppy and it'll take you right where you want to be.
Okay.
All right.
Cool. And we should also tell everyone, in case they don't know, it should be obvious, that with all these new releases, we will be doing something for all the Imagine material coming out, the box set. There's actually going to be like a coffee table size book, and there's a dual release DVD Blu-ray of the Imagine documentary and Give Me Some Truth, and also the White Album box set in November. We will be tackling that on this show.
Now, is Tom going to have to buy all those different manifestations of the Imagine release?
Yes.
He's going to have to get like another credit card. That's a Tom, are you allowed to do that?
See, this is the plan.
No, hey, easy now, easy now.
Egypt Station goes
to number
one.
He's going to have to get a second job.
Imagine goes to number one. All because of all these releases and Tom's buying them all. And the White Album will go to number one. That's the plan.
Well, now that's a future debate for our show, is it not? Because you know they're going to be pushing hard to see the White Album at number one after Sgt. Pepper last year. Imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will there be enough buzz to see Imagine do well in that fashion?
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. Get Yoko on Carpool Karaoke.
There you go.
Our good colleague and one of the great progenitors of all things Beatles, Nicole Michael, has actually flashed on our screen right now.
Yep.
The Monmouth website. So you don't even have to go to my website.
But I showed yours.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thanks, Nicole. You rock, Nicole. No, she rocks.
This has been a lot of fun. Talking about the Ringo and Paul tours and Paul being at number one. And so why don't we just give everyone our contact information right now? Kit, we'll start with you.
Well, you can, of course, contact me at my website, which I'm typing in for you right now. Here we go, kidotool.com. And my Deep Beatles and Deep Soul columns will be back very soon. I've been working on some other projects, so I'm catching up, but those will be up. And do check out my interview on my Facebook page that I did, I guess it's last week now, with our friend Ken Womack, talking about not only the conference, but about George Martin. We had a lot of fun doing a discussion. So that's on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. So do check that out. And I have a review of Ringo's concert at the Chicago Theater up at Something Else Reviews right now. So you can go check that out.
Great. And we, of course, are going to be doing something with Ken, talking about the new George Martin book, the second George Martin book that he wrote called Sound Pictures, fairly soon, if we could squeeze it in with all these new releases.
Yeah, we are crazy. Our dance card is full.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to dance tonight.
Yeah. Oh.
Everybody's going to feel all right.
Saw what you did there.
Ken? To get in contact with you, you just mentioned your website.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll say it loud and I'll say it often. KennethWomack.com. That's where all of my contact information is. I love to hear from folks. Of course, it's a great way to find that White Album link. We would sure love to have you on the Jersey Shore here with us, but do not tarry. A number of folks are booking it already because it's going to be the place to be. There's a rumor even, and it's true, so I'll say it, that our dear friend Mark Lapidus, founder of Beatles Fest, will and a wonderful Beatles vendor who has great prices on everything, will be working to have copies available at our conference so that folks can order them in advance, and we will hand it to you as you walk into that listening session at 12:01. How about that? And
nice.
Because Mark is an amazing, generous man, as we all know and have known him for many years, he's even going to do a give back for the Bruce Springsteen Archives and Center for American Music which of course is our hosting party for these great events that we're doing at Monmouth.
Wow. What a salesman Ken is.
I know, right?
I got to get him to work for me.
I do work for you.
Tom, what's going on with you and what's going on with Two Legs, your podcast?
Yeah, well, we just dropped our first episode of our third season about 11 days ago. We did an episode on the Love You Make Blu-ray DVD combo, if you want to call it that, where we just, you know, we review the movie and we give our thoughts on it. We talk about what we were doing that day on that very, very sad day. And like I said, that just dropped 11 days ago. You can check it out on Podbean. Just type in Two Legs and you'll see the picture, our logo for Two Legs. You can reach out to us on our email address, twolegspodcast@gmail.com, and check out our Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We got a bunch of other exciting interviews coming up. And matter of fact, I'll be interviewing your co-host tomorrow night, the great Alan Kozin. So looking forward to that.
Nice.
Alan Kozin, who, by the way, will be one of the guests at the White Album symposium.
It's all circular, isn't it?
it's like a circle.
It's like we're in the rinse and repeat.
Yeah. It's like we're at the Easter demos.
That's right. Circles. Nice. It took me a minute.
Oh.
They're like magic circles.
Nicely played, sir. Nicely played.
A book by Devin McKinney. Devin will be at the White Album event. I could do this all night.
Everything circles back.
Okay, as far as my contact information.
Yeah, tell us about Ken Michaels.
Yep.
You can email me everylittlething@att.net. My website is kenmichaelsradio.com. You can find interviews on the website with Kit discussing many things from her book, songs we were singing, with Ken back when he put out that old book on George Martin. So old now.
Oh, yeah.
Volume.
Those were the days, huh?
So now I got to get a new interview with
my friend. Yeah,
yeah.
That's I got it. I got
those
it.
Those are the days of I want to be a man.
And I do happen to have my Beatles trivia every single week, where you can win one of 9 great prizes, including Kit's book, Songs We Were Singing, the new album, the new CD, I should say, from Paul McCartney, Egypt Station. I'm trying to finagle something with Ken right now for the new George Martin book, Sound Pictures. We'll see if something happens soon there. But and you can also find
Come
a
on,
list
Ken,
of
pony
all,
up.
All the
I feel the pressure.
I have 2 other shows on the Beatles that I host or co-host. There's Every Little Thing, a syndicated radio show, 1-hour music show with Every Little Thing, including thematic sets, interviews with the people on this panel. If you want a list of all the stations that carry it, that's on my website. And then there's my podcast show with Alan Kozin and Darren DeVivo, our new co-host, Things We Said Today, which you can catch on podbean.com and also on YouTube and where else? iTunes. And I think that's it. Also on fab4radio.com, which, by the way, runs Every Little Thing, Talk More Talk, and Things We Said Today. A triple threat if there ever was one.
I'll say.
Doesn't get any better.
So thanks to Matt Burley for carrying all 3 shows at Fab Four Radio. And this has been a blast. And so hopefully on our next show, we'll be tackling the Imagine releases. So that's something to look forward to right there. Thanks so much to everyone. All right. For tuning in, and I've enjoyed this so much. Such a great idea to focus mainly on the solo careers of the Beatles. There's so much to talk about, and it's so great to be sharing it with you 3 guys. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time.